Welcome to Conscious Voices, a weekly program dedicated to bringing you alternative points of view to challenging popular assumptions in order to help you be better informed and civically engaged. I'm Evan Davis, your host again for this edition. We're a week away from the newest International Climate Summit in Glasgow, which promises to be the most critical meeting of its type so far. This is because, after decades of foot-dragging by leading industrial nations, measures taken to curb the damage and disruption human populations are causing have been woefully insufficient. Indeed, global consumption of fossil fuels, deforestation, and the generation of methane, both by meat-centered agriculture and by fossil fuel extraction, have actually increased, even as warnings from climatologists, biologists, glaciologists, and others have become more frequent, more urgent, and more dire. This summer, a special working group of the United Nations known as the IPCC released a damning report on the urgency of the situation, a report that was called Code Red for Humanity. It warned that unless drastic and immediate measures are taken to curb greenhouse gas emissions, the goals of the Paris Climate Accord will be unattainable. And thanks to our destructive impacts, the escalating cycle of climate change will accelerate faster than anything we can do to try to mitigate it. It should be understood that the Paris Accords were also the result of much wrangling and compromising, as industrialized nations fought not to adopt effective measures, but to minimize the impact of such necessary measures on their economies. The U.S. joined the Accords, but then the previous administration abruptly withdrew from them and gutted many of the existing environmental regulations we already had in place, such as fuel efficiency requirements for newly manufactured vehicles. The Biden administration has rejoined the Paris Accords, but circumstances have changed even more in the response. A global environmental movement has grown and become more militant, placing political pressure on governments around the world to take meaningful action. And part of that new movement is a growing awareness of the interconnectedness of human issues like poverty and racial disparity and the ways in which they contribute to the crisis. Swedish environmentalist Greta Thunberg mentions this in every speech, saying that we cannot effectively address global warming without also resolving global poverty. For years, independent media outlets have been highlighting the disproportionate effects of climate change on the economically disadvantaged in America and elsewhere, that disproportionately refers to people of color, who are often the hardest hit when climate change catastrophe strikes. We see this now in places like Puerto Rico and Louisiana and Texas. The Biden administration's proposed infrastructure packages seek to address this crisis in a global way, attacking poverty in the U.S. at the same time as driving a rapid shift to renewable energy. But it is these measures that are being filibustered by the Democratic Party, or within the Democratic Party, by its two right-wing demagogues, West Virginia's Joe Manchin and Arizona's Kyrsten Sinema. Thanks to their resistance, the infrastructure bills that were originally a single package of over $13 trillion were scaled down to a $1.5 and a $3.5 trillion pair of bills, and now that $3.5 trillion bill is getting whittled further to less than $2 trillion. If the bills are allowed to pass, they may become underfunded mandates, as Sinema opposes increasing taxes on the rich, so it remains to be seen how much of the measures that get adopted will actually be realized. It's clear that this is only one step in a longer road toward climate justice. Efforts are already underway to ramp up a campaign to challenge Sinema in the next Arizona primary. Meanwhile, in Columbus, a measure is on the ballot that alleges to be about clean energy, but which in reality, according to a consensus of environmental groups, may actually be a dark money-funded attempt to derail the city's existing climate change policies and programs by diverting substantial funding to a private agency that has neither transparency nor accountability. Issue 7 would carve out some $87 million from the city's budget and place it in the hands of a yet-to-be-identified private agency that would administer several energy policy programs that the bill fails to fully articulate. Therefore, environmental groups like the Ohio Environmental Council are urging a no vote on Issue 7. In today's show, we have an excerpt from the IPCC's press conference where experts spell out in detail exactly what the crisis is and what must be done to avert it.
I am pleased and proud to welcome you all to this virtual press conference. It follows something unique and unprecedented for the IPCC and for many other international organizations. We have just completed a virtual approval session. Virtual, you know, session, you know, but a virtual approval session, it is the first one in the history. I want to highlight this. It is the first virtual approval session. Not only was it the first in IPCC history, it was also one of the few approval sessions that did not run into extra time. And probably with the largest participation of delegates. When we first realized over a year ago that the pandemic might force us to hold a virtual session, many said it was impossible. It was impossible. People raised concern about connectivity problems as well as inclusivity as well as transparency. In the IPCC Secretariat, we worked intensively with our bureau and with the Working Group 1 bureau in an exhaustive consultation with our member government to find a format that would be consistent with the values and principles of the IPCC. IPCC should have a neutral and policy neutral outcome. And we succeeded. I am proud to say that we succeeded. We succeeded. Over 2 weeks, we worked calmly and efficiently without a technical hitch. No, zero technical hitch. This is something to flag. Whatever time was scheduled, a session was unsocial. Hours for someone, we had delegates and authors join in from UTC plus 13 hours, like in Samoa, to UTC minus 7 hours in the North American West Coast. Our participants clocked up 186 hours on a virtual platform during these 2 weeks. And they were working an average of 12.6 hours a day. I should not reveal that to you, that what it said in closed IPCC meeting, but I can tell you that many delegates in their closing statements said that this was the most successful IPCC approval session they could remember. Just to have flagged that in this comparison, they include even the personal, the plenary in person. That means it's this virtual one was the best one compared to even other physical one. We had a record of attendance of 739 participants. And this is really a record. We never have an in-person plenary that number of participants. And as you are about to hear, the result was one of the strongest and most significant report of the IPCC has produced. And this report for Working Group 1 is coming to fill the basket, the package of the sixth cycle, for which we are producing 8 reports, making this sixth cycle the most intense, the most rich in the IPCC history. Once again, it is a record. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Working Group 1 co-chair, Valerie and Pan Mao. I want also to thank Bureau members, the 234 authors, and also the technical support unit team the working group one as the others as well. And also, I want to thank very warmly my small secretariat, which is like a beehive working nonstop. We have no time zone for IPCC, IPCC secretariat. I want to thank Harmony, our parent organization. And also, yes, I want to thank our chair for his leadership through all this process. In this sixth cycle, we are making a story. So I want to thank all the one who contributed in background to this process. So with this word, I want to turn to Jonathan. Jonathan, you have the floor.
Thank you, Abdallah. And we now have over 7,000 people following us on this press conference. And I'll invite Inna to make some opening remarks.
Thank you very much. And let me just echo what Abdallah just said. A warm and sincere thanks to everyone who's been involved in this, to the IPCC, to the authors, and to everyone who has been involved in this latest climate alarm. Your work, based on science, is particularly appreciated given the disruption of COVID-19. You've been telling us for over three decades of the dangers of allowing the planet to warm. The world listened, but didn't hear. The world listened, but it did not act strongly enough. And as a result, climate change is a problem that is here now. Nobody's safe, and it's getting worse faster. We must treat climate change as an immediate threat, just as we must treat the connected crisis of nature and biodiversity loss and pollution and waste as immediate threats. As recently noted in the IPCC and the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, IPBES, the twin to IPCC, if you like, under the CBD Convention, we understand that climate change exacerbates already grave risks to biodiversity and natural managed habitats. Ecosystem degradation damages nature's ability to reduce the force of climate change. And as the IPCC Working Group 1 report reminds us, reducing greenhouse gases will not only slow climate change, but will improve air quality. It's all connected. It's time to get serious because every ton of CO2 emission adds to global warming. As the UNFCCC noted last week, 110 countries, just 110 out of 191 parties to the convention have submitted new or updated NDCs ahead of the next climate COP. Governments need to make their net zero plan an integral part of their Paris commitments. They must finance and support developing countries to adapt to climate change, as promised under the Paris Agreement. They must decarbonize faster. They must restore natural systems that draw down carbon, cut out methane and other greenhouse gases faster, get behind the Kigali Amendment to the Montreal Protocol to cut the climate impact of the cooling industry. And every business, every investor, and every citizen needs to play their part. We can't undo the mistakes of the past, but this generation of political and business leaders, this generation of conscious citizens can make things right. This generation can make the systemic changes that will stop the planet warming, help everyone adapt to the new conditions, and create a world of peace, prosperity, and equity. Climate change is here now, but we are also here now. And if we don't act, who will? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Inga. And now I'd invite Petteri to take the floor.
Thank you, Jonathan. And thanks for inviting me for this opening of this important session. WMO organized the first World Climate Conference already in 1979 to establish IPCC. The risk of climate change was caused by growing consumption of oil coal and natural gas was recognized by the meteorological community. IPCC has been working under WMO and UNEP since then, and WMO has been proud to host the IPCC Secretariat. Now we are publishing the physical science part of the sixth assessment report, which is summarizing the results published in peer-reviewed scientific literature during the last 8 years. I would like to thank hundreds of authors and reviewers of this massive report, and especially I would like to thank Valerie Masson-Delmotte and Panmal Tsai, who have been leading the work and have devoted several years of their career for IPCC. You will soon hear the main findings of this report. The key messages are still the same as in the first IPCC report, which was published already in 1988. Namely, climate change is already detected by using several measured physical parameters. Secondly, the human-induced emissions of greenhouse gases, especially carbon dioxide, will pose a threat for human well-being and for the biosphere. And thirdly, reduction of the emissions of greenhouse gases would be needed and recommended to minimize the risks of future climate change. The report published today echoes the same messages with much higher urgency. Climate change is already more visible, and the emissions have grown more rapidly than we ever expected in 1979. I had a chance to follow this also personally as a scientist since the 80s, and professor and also chair of the National IPCC Committee and National Delegate. Natural variability has always been causing weather extremes, and we'll do so also in the future. We just closed the Tokyo Olympic Games yesterday. By using sports terms, one could say that the atmosphere has been exposed to doping, which means that we have begun observing climate extremes more often than before. That means record-breaking temperatures, drought, forest fires observed also this year and also during these days in Greece, in California, for example. We have also more water vapor in the atmosphere, which has led to severe flooding problems as observed in Central Europe and China recently with several casualties, unfortunately. The warming of the oceans has affected the frequency and area of existence of the most intense tropical storms, hurricanes, typhoons, and cyclones. Have we lost the hope? No one, yes. According to this report, we are still having a chance to stop the negative climate trend during the mid of this century by especially limiting the use of fossil fuels and by stopping deforestation. Some changes will continue for centuries and or even thousands of years, like sea level rise, melting of glaciers, and shrinking of Arctic sea ice and snow cover. The report underlines the urgency to enhance the ambition level of climate mitigation. We are not yet heading towards Paris limits 1.5 to 2 degrees warming by the end of this century. At UN, our aim is to reach 1.5 degree warming level, which would be best for the welfare of mankind and biosphere. Now we are heading towards 2 to 3 degrees warming instead. We have received encouraging pledges by several countries, which would mean about 2.1 degree warming if materialized as promised. This is not enough to avoid several harmful impacts, like loss of food production capacity, water shortages, extreme heat, forest fires, continued sea level rise, potential of refugee crises, and the negative impacts on world economy and biosphere. Besides climate mitigation, it is essential to pay attention to climate adaptation, since the negative trend in climate will continue for decades and in some cases for thousands of years. One powerful way to adapt to is to invest in early warning, climate and water services. Only half of the 193 members of WMO have such services in place, which means more human and economic losses. We have also severe gaps in weather and hydrological observing networks, especially in Africa, some parts of Latin America, and in the Pacific and Caribbean island states, which has a major negative impact on the accuracy of weather forecasts in those areas, but also worldwide. The message of the IPCC report is crystal clear. We have to raise the ambition level of mitigation. The forthcoming COP26 meeting in Glasgow this November will be a critical milestone to combat climate change. By using sports terms again, we need the sport already during this decade, not just before the finish, as we do at the running competitions. Thank you.
Thank you, Petteri. And I now invite Hui Sung to introduce the report.
Thank you, Jonathan. Firstly, I'd like to recall that today is the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. IPCC assessments draws on enormously, and also the respect indigenous knowledge all over the world. We recognize that traditional agricultural practices can be resilient to climate and non-climate stressors, and indigenous knowledge systems and practices allow local people to accept, to adapt to many climatic changes. I would also like to inform you that this report is dedicated to the memory of Sir John Houghton, one of the key figures in the creation of the IPCC in 1988, who served as chair and co-chair of Working Group 1 and who died in April last year. And the interactive atlas, one of the innovative aspects of this report, is dedicated to the memory of Gemma Teresa Narisma, one of its coordinating lead authors, who sadly passed away in March this year. The report that we are presenting today is the result of an unprecedented effort by the IPCC community. On top of the intense efforts required for any IPCC report, we have faced the challenge of completing the assessment in a pandemic, which obliged us to shoulder not only extra work, but develop new ways of working to get the job done. This was an unprecedented effort, but we finished on time with greater participation than usual and have delivered strong, clear scientific assessment of climate change. Many thanks to the authors who took on this responsibility to deliver the report, and to the Working Group 1 Bureau, Technical Support Unit, and the IPCC Secretariat who made this possible. Let me also thank the government of France and China for their generous support of the TSU and of Spain for support of the Interactive Atlas. And thanks to our member governments who provided us with necessary guidance so that we could hold a virtual approval session and then participated in the meeting in a spirit of cooperation and collegiality to approve the report. IPCC reports are for policymakers, and it is particularly rewarding to see the wealth of policy-relevant information in this report. For instance, the regional focus and regional data that will support policymakers in their decisions. This focus on regional information that with new chapters and the interactive atlas is one of the many innovative aspects of the report. Others include dedicated chapters on human influence on climate and on the interaction of a changing climate with extreme weather events. This report will serve as a timely new evidence base for negotiators at the COP26 negotiations starting in less than 3 months. It will be a valuable toolbox for negotiators as they consider the level of ambition at COP26 and together with the rest of the sixth assessment report as they prepare for the global start take. This report, Climate Change 2021, the physical science basis, expands our knowledge of attribution of climate change including the human contribution to extreme weather events. And it provides us with an improved understanding of climate change, including warming, past, present, and future. First, it tells us that it is indisputable that human activities are causing climate change and making extreme weather events more frequent and severe. Second, it shows that climate change is affecting every region on our planet. And lastly, it explains that strong, rapid, sustained reductions in carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas emissions would be required to limit global warming. My colleagues Valerie and Panmao will now give you a more detailed account. I hand back to Jonathan.
Thank you very much, Huesung. And I now invite Valerie and Panmao to present the new report. Please bear with us for a few seconds while we switch the presentation.
Thank you, Jonathan. Before we get on to presenting the findings of the IPCC 6 assessment report on the physical science basis of climate change, I'm proud to unveil the artwork that is featured on the cover page of the report. An artist created this piece of visual art on this front cover, having been inspired by a scientific figure in our summary for policymakers. This global view highlights one of the most important messages from this report, that climate change is already affecting every region on our planet. And every fraction of additional warming will increasingly affect every region in multiple ways.
The IPCC does not conduct new research itself. Instead, the hundreds of scientists who worked on this report came together to assess the current state of knowledge of the science of climate change. They reviewed over 14,000 studies, massive amounts of data. In this assessment, we welcomed the new authors, two-thirds of whom had never been involved as authors of previous IPCC reports. Our team was made up of scientists from 66 countries around the world. In the review process, three phases of review by governments and experts, we took on board over 78,000 comments from experts and the governments. All review comments are addressed by the authors. And because of the pandemic, these meetings moved online, and we had to invent an entirely new way of working, which ended up in this unprecedented online approval process over the last 2 weeks. People said we couldn't do it, but we did.
Since the last assessment report in 2013, there have been important advances in climate science worldwide. During these years, climate scientists filled in gaps in observations of past climates. They improved climate models and developed new ways to combine many types of evidence. As a result, today, we have the clearest picture of how the Earth's climate functions and how human activities affect it. We know better than ever how the climate has changed in the past, how it is changing now, and how it will change in the future.
Of course, we have known for decades that the world is warming, but the recent changes we have seen in the climate are now widespread, rapid, and intensifying. Some of the changes we see today are unprecedented in thousands of years or never seen before. The recent rate of warming is unprecedented in at least 2,000 years. To measure how the climate is changing, we looked at a key indicator, the average temperature of the Earth's surface over a period of at least a decade
compared to the average in the late 1800s. If we took at the last 10 years, the average surface temperature was 1.1 degrees Celsius warmer. In fact, each of the last four decades has successfully been the warmest since the late 1800s. Temperature is not only aspect that is being altered. Levels of heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere continue to increase fast. Current CO2 concentrations are the highest they've been for at least 2 million years. Over the past 100 years, sea level has risen at faster rates than it ever did in at least 3,000 years. Some Arctic sea ice area is at its lowest in at least 1,000 years. And the retreat of glaciers on global scale since 1950 is unprecedented in at least 2,000 years. The warming we have already experienced has far-reaching consequences. Climate change is contributing to increase in extreme heat, heavy precipitation event, and the drought. Since 1950s, hot extremes, including heat waves over land and the marine heat wave, have become more frequent and more intense. Heavy precipitation events have become more frequent and more intense. And we see increasing drought in some regions. These consequences to heat, rainfall, and the drought touch our whole planet, not just people, but also plants and animals, both nature and agriculture. The growing season of plants has lengthened on average in large parts of the Northern Hemisphere. Fire weather, the combination of dry, hot, and windy conditions that is conducive to wildfire is becoming more frequent in many parts of the world. Multiple changes are taking place in ocean, which is warming, acidifying, and losing oxygen, affecting ocean life and the people who depend on it.
There will be further warming in the coming decades. What is clear from this report is that unless there are immediate, strong, rapid, and large-scale reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius will be beyond reach. The report shows that in the next 20 years, global warming, the average temperature at the Earth's surface over a period of 20 years, is expected to reach or exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius above the late 1800s. However, if we rapidly reduce greenhouse gas emissions, if we can reach global net zero CO2 emissions around 2050, it is extremely likely that we can keep global warming well below 2 degrees. If we do this, it is more likely than not that temperature would gradually decline to below or around 1.5 degrees Celsius by the end of the century, with a temporary overshoot of no more than 0.1 degrees Celsius. But if global greenhouse gas emissions remain around today's levels in the coming decades, we would reach 2 degrees of global warming by the middle of this century. With every additional amount of global warming, we will see greater changes in the climate. Every additional half degree of warming will cause increases in the intensity and frequency of hot extremes, heavy precipitation, and drought. At 2 degrees of global warming, heat extremes would more often reach critical tolerance thresholds for agriculture and human health. At a global scale, extreme daily rainfall events intensify by about 7% for each additional degree Celsius of global warming. As you see, future further changes depend on future human influence. Now, Panmau, let's go back to where we are today.
It is disputable that human activities
It is indisputable that human activities have caused and are causing climate change. What's new in this report is that we now have a much more advanced understanding of the connections between the emissions we release and the rise in global surface temperature and the change to weather and the climate we are seeing around the world. It is unequivocal that human influence has warmed the atmosphere, ocean, and the land. Almost all the observed warming from the late 1800s is human caused. In this report, we looked at all the atmospheric gases that affect the climate. We confirmed that human caused emissions of greenhouse gases are the main driver of global warming. And we can see clearly how much warming comes from carbon dioxide, methane, and other greenhouse gases. We can also assess the influence of pollution particles that call aerosols, which have an overall cooling effect. This cooling effect partly masks the warming from the greenhouse gases. We also looked at all the natural factors that can affect the climate. We take into account how natural climate variability modulates human-caused changes at the regional scales with little effect on global warming at the central scale. Another major advance in our understanding of human emissions is how our emissions lead to specific changes in the climate, including extreme weather and climate events. We know today that human influence is already making extreme weather and climate events, including heat waves, heavy precipitation, and droughts, more frequent and more severe. Hot extremes, including heat waves, have become more frequent and more intense since 1950s. And some recent hot extremes in the last decade would have been extremely unlikely without human influence on the climate system. Furthermore, we know that human influence has been the main driver of ocean warming since 1970s. And the human-caused CO2 emissions are the main driver of ocean acidification. Human influence in contributing to reduced oxygen levels in the ocean observed since the mid-20th century. Human influence is also the main driver of change we see in the frozen areas of the planet, the cryosphere, driving the global retreat of glaciers since the 1990s. The 40% decrease in Arctic sea ice since 1979, and the decrease in spring snow cover since the 1950s. It is very likely that human influence contributed to surface melt of Greenland ice sheet in last 20 years. These advances in our understanding of how human activities are affecting the climate mean that today we can better estimate the change we may experience, both gradual trends and extremes, resulting from different amounts of emissions, different levels of warming, and across different regions. Climate change is already affecting every region on Earth in multiple ways. But climate change manifests differently depending on where in the world you are. There are different combinations of changes in every part of the world. In this report, we added more new information that is useful on a regional scale. This is an area of climate science that has rapidly advanced in the last 10 years. To reflect this and provide more information helpful to inform decisions related to risk management and adaptation, around a third of our report is dedicated to regional climate information. As a part of our focus on regional climate information, we also introduce a new concept of climatic impact drivers to help translate physical changes in climate, heat, cold, rain, drought, snow, wind, coastal flooding, and more into what they mean for the society and the ecosystems. We are not only looking at gradual temperature increases, but also at the aspect, but also at the specific conditions where heat goes over thresholds known to lead to severe consequences for people, agriculture, and the wildlife. Many of the changes we assessed are related to the global water cycle. The water cycle means how water moves through the atmosphere, land, ocean, and the cryosphere. With warmer temperatures, the atmosphere can hold more water, and we see more and faster evaporation and heavier precipitation. The monsoon rainfalls, which are also important to so many peoples, are changing in a complex way in response to the contrasting effects of both greenhouse gases and the pollution particles, which we call aerosols. With more global warming, the global water cycle will intensify. That means both heavy rainfall at the same time as we see intensifying drying seasons and droughts. With more global warming, average annual rainfall on land is expected to increase, but that rainfall is expected to become more variable within a season and from year to year. The interactive atlas launched today makes our global and the regional climate information available to all. It includes observations of ongoing changes, the projections of future changes, and you can see the interactive atlas to make your own maps. You can use interactive atlas to make your own maps and analysis using the datasets we used in the report. You can use interactive atlas to find out what climate change means for where you live. Valerie, back to you.
Thank you, Pan Mao. Moreover, many of the changes set in motion by human-caused climate change are slow processes. These long-lasting changes, for most part, affect the planet's frozen regions, the cryosphere, and the ocean. Changes in ice sheets, deep ocean temperature, and acidification will continue for centuries to thousands of years, meaning that they are irreversible in our lifetime and will continue for generations to come. In this report, we show that over the course of this century, global ocean temperature is projected to rise 2 to 8 times as much as it has increased since the early 1970s. The melting of the Greenland and Antarctic ice sheets will continue for thousands of years. This means that sea level will keep rising. Coming back to today, the rate of sea level rise keeps increasing, and the rate of ice sheet loss has increased by a factor of 4 in the past 30 years. The good news is that these irreversible changes can be slowed down with rapid, strong, and sustained reductions in emissions. And other changes can be stopped if greenhouse gas emissions are deeply reduced. For example, retreating glaciers and Arctic sea ice will continue to decline for at least several decades. But these changes could be slowed and stopped if emissions are reduced. To limit global warming, strong, rapid, and sustained reductions in CO2, methane, and other greenhouse gases are necessary. We know that CO2, carbon dioxide, is the key greenhouse gas driving climate change. We know it comes, for the most part, from the burning of fossil fuels. This report reaffirms that there is a near linear relationship between the cumulative amount of emissions of CO2 in the atmosphere from human activities and the extent of observed and future warming. This is physics. This means that the only way to limit global warming is to reach net zero CO2 emissions at the global scale. Every additional ton of CO2 emissions adds to global warming. Our report gives more details on how reducing emissions will affect the climate. For instance, it quantifies just how much more CO2 we can release and still have a chance to limit warming close to 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2 degrees Celsius. We know that today, around half of our CO2 emissions are taken up and stored by plants, soils, and oceans. We assess how these processes change with future emissions. And we know now that if we release ever greater amounts of CO2, these natural carbon sinks would actually take up a smaller proportion of our future emissions. This report also shows that while CO2 is the dominant greenhouse gas related to human influence on climate, and reaching net zero CO2 is required to limit global warming, strong reductions in other greenhouse gas emissions are needed. Amongst these, methane reductions, together with strong air pollution controls, would benefit both the climate and improve air quality. Our planet is warming, and it is warming quickly, with increasing consequences everywhere. This report is clear that it is possible to limit future warming within a few decades. The climate we experience in the future depends on our decisions now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Valerie and Panmal. We're now ready to take questions from registered media. We already have quite a few in, so I expect we'll be running the Q&A session until 11:30 Geneva, Paris time. A reminder that media should include their name and outlet with any questions they submit. Besides the panelists who have already spoken, we have several members of the Working Group 1 Bureau who are available to respond to questions too. They are Jan Fuglestvedt, Carolina Vera, Irfan Tariq, Fatima Driwesh, Edwin Aldrian, and Greg Flatow. So I'll go to the first question now, which is from Toshiya Kaba of the Tokyo Shimbun newspaper, who's asking about the effect of the coronavirus pandemic on climate change. About Valerie, would you like to take that?
Yes, thank you for the question. So our report shows that due to the lockdown implemented in the pandemic context, there have been temporary reductions in emissions of CO2, a few percent at the global scale. But these are temporary reductions, were not sufficient to have a significant impact. And therefore, the rise in atmospheric CO2 concentration in the atmosphere has continued. Moreover, there have been reductions in emissions of air pollutants, temporary reductions as well, leading to immediate improvements in air quality. These are the two aspects related to the pandemic that are assessed in this report.
Thank you, Valerie. And our next question comes from Sang-Wook Park of JTBC, who says that many countries have committed to a carbon neutral net zero 2050. But as we know, greenhouse gases, especially carbon dioxide, last hundreds of years once emitted. Will it be possible to keep temperatures within 1.5 or 2 degrees in 2050 or this century as a whole? Again, Valerie, please.
Thank you, Jonathan. So in this report, the assessment is based on five scenarios and the assessed response of global temperature. This report shows that in all the assessed scenarios, global warming would reach or exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius in the coming two decades. However, if emissions are reduced rapidly, and if at the global scale they reach net zero, by around 2050, then temperature would be very close to 1.5 degrees Celsius by the mid of the century and would decline lower to that level by the end of the century. So this is what we provide. We provide an updated understanding of how the climate responds to emissions. And this is a critical information that is available to inform decision making worldwide.
Thank you, Valerie. Petteri, do you want to come in on that? No. Okay, then the third question is from Andy Revkin of Revkin Bulletin, who says some climate campaigners and scholars, including at least one longtime IPCC author, criticize the panel process as erring on, quote, the side of least drama, unquote. Is that valid? Maybe, Valerie, you want to start on that, but I expect others might want to come in.
I would like to thank the authors of the report, the hundreds of scientists, for all their efforts to ensure that the report reflects the wealth of available climate information and provides a balanced assessment of where we are and where we could go. For that purpose, the report provides our best estimates, for instance, for the climate response. It also provides a complete description, including what is extremely important for risk management. It is the events that have a small chance of occurring, but could lead to very large scale impacts. And therefore, the report also provides information on very rare climate extreme events or multiple events occurring at the same time that are very important to consider. It also explores what could happen in the case where poorly understood processes leading to the Antarctic ice sheet collapse would start to occur. And therefore, the report also provides high-end estimates for what sea level rise could be in this type of situation. And this information was requested by decision makers because it's extremely important for those who manage critical infrastructure. And the report provides a wealth of information that can be useful and actionable for decision makers to take into account all the scale of risk, especially those taking decisions related to critical infrastructure.
Thank you, Valerie. Inge, please.
Simply to add that the drama is playing out on the front pages of the newspapers today in terms of climate impacts that we are seeing already. So this is a scientific report, and we've already heard from Dr. Masson-Delmont and Dr. Zai. But I think as citizens and as businesses and as governments, we're well aware of the drama. And so the drama exists. We have seen it and we heard about it in every news bulletin. And that's what we need to understand, that the expression of what the science says is exhibited before our very eyes. And of course, what this excellent report does is it projects these scenarios outward and tells us if we do not take action, what could be the potential outcomes? Or if we do take action, what will be a very good outcome? So the power is in our hands at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Petteri?
Yeah, so I have been following this process since 88, and of course these findings of this report, they are not comfortable. So and that's why it's important to pass these messages for decision makers and general public. And of course we have the fact that sometimes media is speaking only those most negative things. And more recently, there have been attacks against IPCC, saying that IPCC's reports are too mild. So in the past, we were having very much this kind of skeptical attacks against science and IPCC itself. But more recently, some people are saying that these reports are too mild. So and I think that's a little bit demonstrating that we are on the right track, and this is very much based on extremely solid science. It's not based on individual scientific papers, but it's a balanced view of the majority of science, and I would like to encourage you to trust those results.
Thank you, Petteri. Carolina.
Thank you. I would like to take the opportunity to also point it out a different aspect that the reports allows society, we, to move away from that perfect perception, that we are shifting from a same zone to one where we experience dramatic changes everywhere overnight. The report clearly shows that we are living the consequences already of climate change everywhere, but furthermore, that we will experience further and concurrent and multiple changes that increase with every additional bit of warming. We should be prepared for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Carolina. Okay, next question from John Cannon of Mungo Bay. The authors say the ocean and land carbon sinks aren't...
There you have it, a substantial excerpt from the IPCC Climate Change Report for 2021, ahead of the International Climate Summit in Glasgow, which gets underway next week. We'll have some coverage of that summit here on these stations and on several programs, including this one, which is Conscious Voices, which airs each week at this time in your community radio stations, WCRSLP 92.7 and 98.3 FM, and WGRNLP 94.1 FM in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis, and I'll see you next week for another edition.
Early every year, the seeds are growing. Unseen, unheard, they lie beneath the ground. Would you know until their leaves are showing that with weeds all your garden will abound? If you close your eyes, stop your ears, hold your tongue, then how can you know? For seeds you cannot see may not be there. Seeds you cannot hear may never grow. In January you've still got the choice. You can cut the weeds before they start to bud. If you leave them to grow high, they'll silence your voice. And in December you may pay with your blood. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear. And later you can say you didn't know. Every day another vulture takes flight. There's another danger born every morning. In the darkness of your blindness, the beast will learn to bite. How can you bite if you can't recognize a warning? So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear. And later you can say you didn't know.
The program you are listening to is broadcast both on community radio station WCRS via translator W245AY at 98.3 FM and on WGRN 94.1 FM, WCRSFM.org and WGRN.org. If you like what you're hearing or want to get involved, please visit those websites and give what you can. Both stations are non-commercial and volunteer-run. Both stations depend on listener support. Again, the websites are WCRSFM.org for WCRS and WGRN.org for WGRN.